It can be both flattering and terrifying to sit for a portrait, depending on who's the artist behind the paintbrush, camera, or whatever the medium. But it's of great interest to the viewer, or listener in some cases.
I like to do them in one sitting, and my span of attention for that kind of concentrated work is about an hour and a half.
American composer Virgil Thompson is one of the few who dared to attempt to make musical portraits over many decades of his distinguished career. And his friends and colleagues sat, willingly, while he composed, trying to evoke something about them. Conductor Eugene Ormandy sat for Thompson, for example, and this piece is the result. And he did the much more avant-garde Tristan Zara, Dadaist poet, known for having said, like everything in life, Dada is useless.
Painters talk to their sitters all the time to keep them awake. I can't write music while I'm talking or while anybody else is talking.
Thompson developed a very specific way he liked to relate to his subject.
So I let him read or meditate or doze as long as they stay there in front of me at a distance of somewhere between 4 and 6 feet.
And listening to his portraits, you might not be able to recognize exactly the people he's conjuring up, but an atmosphere does emerge, the feel of an era. Lourdes Delgado is going for feel, too, in her photographic portraits of jazz musicians now on view. In these pictures, the musicians themselves are small in the frame, dwarfed by their surroundings, which in all cases are their homes. These are environmental portraits. So you get sax player Roy Nathanson in stocking feet, surrounded by old Persian rugs, or trumpeter Jeremy Pelt sitting cross-legged on his bed under a photo of Miles Davis. Delgado has done a series of about 300 of these so far, in which the subjects participate to a degree.
It's a mix between my ideas and the sitter ideas. I ask them always to tell me where they want to be photographed, and also if they want to bring other objects than the ones they are in the room, I'm totally open to it.
In one of her photos, Dewey Redman sits on a sofa, and he's joined by two saxophones poised right beside him, sitting on the couch upright, like visiting guests.
He chose to have the instruments there.
Drummer Kenny Washington posed on polished wood floors in front of his massive wall of CDs and LPs.
Well, he is a music encyclopedia.
Seen this way, in their homes, some tidy, some wildly cluttered, there's a kind of ordinariness about these players who might otherwise seem so magical on stage. There is the sense of a community of home life. In fact, the title of the show is Jazz in New York, A Community of Visions.
In a portrait, the first thing you look always is at the face of somebody. You go directly to it. And that's something I'm trying to fight in my pictures. My approach is to tell this person as part of a society.
Portraits can be social and political. In the Met Museum show Glitter and Doom, which is on view for another 2 weeks, there are rooms of bitter portraits painted in Germany between the two world wars. The show was curated by Sabine Riewoldt.
I think there has never been a time when artists had just as recently back from hell, meaning World War I. They had all fought in it, came back from it, and the human being had more importance to them, and they were full of anger and hatred.
Still lifes and landscapes were put aside as the artists Otto Dix, Max Beckmann, George Gross, and others told the story of their time through searing paintings of people. Some devastatingly unflattering.
Because people who wanted to be flatteringly depicted, let's say Einstein or Marlene Dietrich, would go to society portraits. Marlene Dietrich would go to a photographer and control the light to have the best angles.
The sitters in these paintings are not famous or celebrated, and they are definitely not in control.
These people were like in a police mugshot. They were exposed.
And, as Oscar Wilde observed, every portrait that is painted with feeling is a portrait of the artist, not of the sitter. That was certainly true of the painter Otto Dix.
It's a Dix. It's always a Dix. And he, in a way, peeled all the layers that people have to hide themselves, I don't know, with smiles, with cosmetic, with hairdo. He went to the core and made a type. The cocaine addict, the small town lawyer, the doctor as a killer, the art dealer who's doing a deal. There were all these types, and he pinned them like butterflies.
Dix's portrait of Sylvia von Harden, for example, whom he saw sitting alone in a literary cafe.
She was a blue stocking with a monocle, very ugly. He ran after her, although he didn't know her. On the street, he shouted at her, "I have to paint you." She said, "Why would you want to paint me? I have too short legs, I'm ungainly, I'm ugly, my chin is too long, my teeth are buck teeth." He said, "Because you represent our era." And with that era, he meant the 1920s. So he painted mirrors, choosing people to be these mirrors.
Dix had what Riewoldt called the most poisonous pen of all the portraitists, and he had the cooperation of his sitters because of his standing among the artists of the time. But his complicit sitters paid a price.
Those people who let themselves be portrayed at Dix did not have any vanity because they wouldn't know what Dix would do with them, but it was foreseeable that they would not be depicted as they wanted to be depicted. None of the sitters of Dix ever could live with their own portrait.
They complied with the painters, and then, almost to a person, they took their portraits out of their frames, off the walls, and sold them or hid them away.
And all of these pictures are now in museums.
To sit for a portrait is to be used, sometimes flattered, but often skewered, by an artist, photographer, writer, or musician, until later, when seen as an example of the art of an era, the work becomes a portrait of its time. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishkill.